Thanks, Nick, for the introduction, and many thanks to the organizers for their wonderfully conducted Monte Carlo selection of the talks they described yesterday. For putting together this fantastic program, I'm really happy to be here. You see, I put out some kind of audacious title. So again means two things. Some of you may have seen this talk developing in the process of the last 2.5 years, and that's why. And I, for that part of the audience, I promise not to disappoint you. There will be some new slides. And of course, again is because every single talk on the frustrated magnets begins with a picture like that. Forgive me for showing it, which goes back to two fundamental papers, both kind of foundational papers for the whole field of frustrated magnets. And so the triangular motif is kind of embedded in all the history and again foundation of the field. I will show you that even in such old papers you can find some certain things which are not obvious at the first glance. So let me start with Vanier. So the key message was that there's no unique ground state, but actually the message is deeper. It says that frustration actually can yield you a degeneracy, in a sense that if you put a system on the non-frustrated lattice, your ground state is, let's say, on a bipartite square lattice is just doubly degenerate, change of A sublattice to B sublattice, while in the triangular lattice case, you have exponential degeneracy of the ground state. And just taking a step back and asking why degeneracy is a good thing, you can I tend to think of a Planck scale in which everything related to the standard model is at much lower energies, and we know that a lot of good things come out of it. I forgot to draw a bottle of wine here, but forgive me for that. So it's known as the Feynman statement that there's lots of room at the bottom. And one thing which is important is that subleading interactions become important in the selection of that of the ground state, and effects like order by disorder, which will hopefully be discussed tomorrow by George Jacquelli, is also taking place. I'm not going to talk about order by disorder much today. There is one interesting thing which you may or may not notice reading George Vanier's paper, is that there is an integral which is actually in the abstract, which has a number. And this number was corrected 23 years later by the author in an erratum. I don't know what's going on my screen, so I can see the slide on my screen properly. Okay, so basically, there is also curiosities related to this paper, and if you start reading, it's Pauling, and his ideas are essentially all over this paper, and his quoted is actually, the very term resonance valence bond was coined by Pauling and was culturally incorporated by our field into the frustrated magnets. But if you read the paper carefully, there is actually a reference to somebody else. So it says that actually Rumer and Pauling were responsible for finding out how you weight those different configurations. And there is a reference to the journal, which you don't even understand whether it's a journal's name or something. So the key question here is, who is Mr. Rumer? So this is Yuri Rumer, goes by George in abroad. This is the paper whose translation to English is The Theory of Spin Valence. That's the next paper in the same year, also about valence and molecules, and it's together with Taylor and Weil. And it has familiar pictures. Those papers, by the way, are not easy to acquire, but Edward Snowden wasn't involved this time. So if you want to grasp what was actually done, you can read the paper by Linus Pauling, who actually says the discovery which was made by Rumer is the one that he essentially invented a diagram technique in real space of how to draw orthogonal configurations, electronic configurations for the valence. One reason why Rumer is not a household name is that there are three gentlemen here on the board, one more of whom you may recognize, it's Lev Landau to the right. They were, all three of them were arrested in 1938 on the same charges of attempt to overthrow the government. And while Landau was pulled out from the prison about 1 year later, these two gentlemen spent quite significant time behind bars. So, as they say in Russia, in the places not so far away. So Rumer spent 10 years plus 5 years in exile, and Moisei Korets spent 20 years. So after returning to normal life, actually, Yuri Rumer was the founder of Novosibirsk Science Center, and actually founder of the laboratory to which I can, theoretical laboratory to which I can claim some personal relation, because I spent some few years there before kind of going west. And that's a plaque on the wall of one of the institutions, which is in his honor. And if you want to read more about this unsung hero, this is a nice Physics Uspekhi Review article about about his life and career. Okay, so let me switch after this historical introduction to the year 2015, the kind of experimental birth of triangle lattice systems based on rare earth materials. So they have a rigid triangle lattice structure, meaning that each bond is equivalent to the other bond. And you can kind of see the symmetry of the lattice, 120 degree rotations and stuff. So I would like to call this investigation as the study of most general nearest neighbor with an asterisk, nearest neighbor anisotropic model in the triangle lattice. So you take it as the equivalent of Anderson's investigation of the Heisenberg model, but now you have anisotropic exchanges which are allowed between the nearest neighbors. So it combines two things. It combines these anisotropic interactions, which may be familiar to you from the Kitaev models, with the traditional geometrical frustration of the triangle lattice. And there's no Kitaev-like solution there, but I will show that there is still some interesting physics. So the study was done all at Irvine, the study I'm going to describe. DMRG work, which I'm going to highlight, was done by Zhenyu Zhu, who is now at Artificial Intelligence Company, and Pavel was my student. He's now back to Russia, to Dubna. So, as Ronnie can confirm, all good things have to come in the amount of three, right? Is it how it goes? Okay. So we wrote our trilogy on this subject with some funny names, and I will begin with the last one as the more extensive one, and kind of bounce, go back here, bounce back there, and then maybe if I have time, cover some basics of the first investigation. So let me go through the kind of sequence of thoughts about rare earth systems in general. So if you have Cramer's ion, so ytterbium 3+, has J equal to 7/2, it's actually just painful to think about the model to describe it, so it has lots of states in it. What saves you is the crystal field splitting. So it simplifies things quite a bit, because all the spectrum is split in the set of doublets, and if the splitting is large and you're interested in low energy physics, all you're interested in is just the lowest doublet. Okay, so then the lowest doublet is parameterized as the pseudospin 1/2, and you can write Hamiltonian on this X bond here as the matrix. And in general, you can have up to 9 independent elements there. What helps you next is the fact that you have a discrete symmetry of the lattice, and there are two particular transformations which are easy to imagine. You just can take this X bond for which I wrote the Hamiltonian and rotate the system 180 degrees around this axis. You will map the system on itself, which means that Hamiltonian should not change, which eliminates 4 out of 9 matrix elements here. And then translation by one side and inversion actually requires that these two terms are the same, so it's only a symmetric term which survives. And then there is, of course, 2 pi over 3 rotation of the lattice, which should leave it invariant. Okay, so and the simplification is, of course, that it's F shell electrons, therefore it's mostly nearest neighbor, although in some real systems there may be a presence of the second nearest neighbor. Okay, so you have 4 parameters now, and it should be easy to come up with a model. In fact, we have not one, we have not two, we have at least three models. All three of them in what can be called a wide circulation. And there's actually another model, but let's not talk about that. So when I was a newcomer to this field a few years ago, and my first question was who is creating this model? Okay, who is you know inventing those? And this is a point I have to apologize for a depiction I made 1 year ago, a year and a few months at HFM meeting at Davis, where I showed how these models are created and used. And in fact, it did affect quite a few people who are, let's say, who are easily impressed. This is a picture from Friedrich's Becker talk in this very given in this very room, I think February of this year. Nobody was laughing because it was machine learning conference. Nobody knew who the hero was. And Leon was away. So I apologize because I was approached by my now former junior member, of junior colleague, who told me that my depiction is completely wrong. This colleague should probably remain nameless. It just suffices to say that he lives on an island now. So he showed me my error, so I want to correct myself publicly. So this is how the models are given to us. And the model number two, yeah. Okay. All right. With that duty out of my way, let me proceed. So what are the models? So one of them comes from the so-called ice physics of, or motivated by the ice physics of parafloors. The second one comes from a somewhat different direction when people studied clock or compass models, and it's sort of an equivalent representation, and I'll show the slight difference which exists there. And the last one is familiar to you from the studies of KJ gamma, gamma prime models of KTIF systems, for instance, in honeycomb systems. So they all have, the all models are the same, so they're just different parameterization of these four parameters, okay? So why am I making such a big deal out of it? First of all, if you talk to experimentalists and you ask a simple question, what's the JZ parameter of your model, or JZZ in different notations? And the answer will be different in all three models. Because here there is a reshuffling comparison in comparison with this model. And in this model, by the way, the Kitaev-like model, is actually written in the axis which are not the axis of your plane of spins. It's the lattice associated with the bonds of ligands. It's a so-called cubic axis. So there is also a problem with some people using different conventions for I, minus signs, sine of one-halves, etc. So we clearly need a standardization. I will come back to this point if I have time in the very end. Okay, so in the spirit of creating new models, so creating a dialect, so to speak, to these languages, let me proceed with my introduction of the model. I introduced the model along the one axis, and let me offer you a slightly different parameterization. So basically, all other bonds are obtained from this matrix by rotation by 120 or minus 120 degrees, and you end up with a model which I would like to refer to as XXZ J++ JZ plus model. So what I basically do, I separate the bond-independent part, which now looks very familiar to people outside of this field, which is just XXZ model. And then there are bond-dependent terms, which I keep notations the same as in the ICE language, but abbreviate them instead of plus-minus, I just use plus-plus and z-plus. So the parameterization is that two diagonal terms here combine into J. Delta is the ratio of JZ to that J, and then this is actually important, will be important in the very end, that J++ is actually a difference of these two diagonal terms, and JZ plus is that of diagonal term. Okay, so this again, these two are bond dependent, and this is not bond dependent. Now the time for the asterisk is the following. So I claim to that we have explored the entire parameter space, but actually we did not. We can claim we explored the most interesting part of it, and also most experimentally related, because most materials known so far have delta less than one. Delta larger than 1 is a uniformizing model for the bond-independent part, so it's less interesting and so on. And this one is sort of less physically motivated, but maybe interesting to go there at some point. Okay, so again, this is a model, and you have 4 parameters, meaning that there is 1 scale, and you have 3 independent parameters, right? So,
Sasha, may I ask you this?
Sure.
So what is the reason for the anisotropy?
Spin orbit, of course. So it's basically your ion is the mix of some, you know, complicated Hilbert space. It's just projected on that low energy doublet, and that's it. So
I guess what I was asking is that you could have the exchange anisotropy, for instance, if the coupling goes via different ligands out of plane instead of in plane.
That's true.
Is it because the geometry? So what is the lattice structure? Is it a triangle?
It's hexagonal with octahedral environment of ligands, oxygens mostly. Now it's basically done at the level of crystal field splitting already, so it's not So the second idea, aside from this dialect, what we try to propagate in this community is how to draw this model. And as you will see, the most of the phase diagram is, of course, taken by the ordered state and ordered states. And many of them are coplanar with the lattice, and therefore do not depend on the classical level on delta at all. So it's very useful to choose delta as a vertical axis. So the bottom of this cylinder is the xy limit of the bond independent part, at the top layer is the Heisenberg part. Okay, and then the anisotropic terms parameterize, I'll show it in a second, parameterize the polar and radial variables here. So let me switch to the quasi-classic. So let's study this model quasi-classically. For that, it's very instructive just to ask yourself what each individual term of the model wants to do. And you can focus on the XXZ part, and of course if J is ferromagnetic, then you have a ferromagnetic state. If it's antiferromagnetic, it gives you 120 degree state. So this is well known. The question about the anisotropic term, so if you just leave this term alone and write it along one bond, or rather one-dimensional chain, you can ask, you know, what this term want? And just looking at it, you immediately realize that what it wants is some type of counter-rotating spiral. So it equivalently minimizes energy either for the antiferromagnetic direction with both spins along the bond, or both spins perpendicular to the bond but being ferromagnetic. Okay, so, and you know, for those of you in the cation business, you may recognize that actually some of the sodium iridates do realize the counter-rotating spirals in their ground state experimentally. So this one-dimensional consideration, however, so there is some hidden symmetry, it seems, but it actually doesn't work because for two reasons. The triangle lattice is not bipartite. So you cannot do it in other dimensions. And the second thing is that this XY plane, which is in the plane, for each direction or different direction of the bonds, it will be rotated by 60 degrees. And therefore, this U1s for different directions are not compatible. So you have an effect which can be described as a locking. And so as a result of this locking appear the so-called striped X state, meaning that you have, for negative sign of J++, the spins want to align themselves along the bond, and in this sort of ferromagnetic chain coupled antiferromagnetically fashion, which are referred to as stripes, and for opposite sign of J++, they are perpendicular to the bond, okay? So you can see that they're indeed bond-dependent. So for the last term, for the most annoying term here, JZ plus, the difference is, it's actually the same picture, but now in Z and Y axis, Z is perpendicular to the plane of the triangle lattice. And the angle of this counter-rotating spiral is not pi, but 3 pi over 2. And what this term wants, if left alone, it wants spins point under 45 degrees to the plane of the lattice, and again arrange themselves in these stripes, which are always perpendicular to one bond. Okay? So now we figure it out what the system wants, and we can start drawing phase diagram, and this is sort of zeroth order phase diagram. Again, the parameterization of each circle, each cut of this cylinder is done in the following way, that JZ plus is parameterizing the radial direction, and J plus plus is parameterizing the polar. You can see five phases here, one of which I didn't talk about, which is this 12 sublattice state, which we refer to as dual 120 degree state, and I can elaborate why it exists. And they all have, first of all, they are all single Q states. Okay, they correspond to one ordering vector, and they also all commensurate. Okay, so you just run, compare the energies, and you obtain this beautifully looking phase diagram. Okay, maybe one more note for the future is that if you look at this line, this is actually the line at every value of delta. This is a line where J term is completely absent. So the entire Hamiltonian consists only of the J++ and JZ+ terms. So it's fully, ultimately an isotropic model. Okay, so again, if anyone knows how to look for spin liquids more intelligently, please let me know. The kind of traditional method is to look at the boundaries of the classical phases and see if there is any instability there towards some other state. There was a thought that maybe somebody is missing Kitaev-like solution somewhere here along that white line, and it didn't quite work, but actually we still found something there, but for a different reason.
Sasha, can I ask you a question about this all being Q equals naught? You said it was single Q?
Yeah, single Q.
Okay, sorry.
So there is ferromagnetic state which has gamma point. This is...
Right, okay.
Yeah. Okay, so... we can find spin waves for 12 sublattices is just too much, for these four phases. And actually for ferromagnetic and antiferromagnetic phase, it's somewhat non-trivial exercise. And I think we were the first to do that. It's a bit cumbersome. And the other complication is that the ground state actually doesn't care about J++ and JZ+ terms at all. So in fact, the system has... what they call emergent U1 symmetry, and therefore you need to do an additional order by disorder consideration in order to find the true ground state. But after that's done, you have you can have a calculation of the ordered moment. And taking spin 1/2, you can plot the value of the ordered moment. This is for the cut in right in the middle of the cylinder at delta 0.5. And you can plot on the color scale the value of the ordered moment. And everything which is red means that it's between 0.4 and 0.5. So it's essentially classical state. And you can see that, well, you may have some hope over here, the tip of 120 degree structure, but it's actually still the ordered moment that's significantly high. There are blue regions here, aside from the one which we didn't bother to develop spin wave theory for. So the basic conclusion is bad news for the spin liquid, okay, from the at least quasi-classical perspective. But there are these additional regions which look like some openings, but at a close inspection, which was done before us numerically, but we can confirm them, all the phase boundaries can be confirmed within our approach rather simply and straightforwardly, and also point out the additional wave vector at which instability of spin waves occurs, which indicates to what kind of order you have an instability to. It actually, there is appearance of so-called multi-Q states. Okay, so which in more humane language is just modulated stripes. Okay, so the second consideration in a kind of complementary consideration in the quasi-classics is actually consideration of the stability of the spectrum. And what I just showed, so this is now in the Cartesian plot focusing on the 120 degree phase. So the boundaries of stability for magnons in the stripe phases occur within their regions of defined by the classical phase diagram. You can ask, where is the stability region for the 120 degree magnons? And it's shown by the green line. And it's also very bad news for any possible non-magnetic intermediate phase, because normally overlap of the stability of magnons means that you have a direct transition between the phases. At least it's indicative of that. However, when you reduce the XXZ anisotropy towards the Heisenberg limit, you can see that the green line kind of collapses on the J++ axis. So this is J++, this is JZ+. And you can see it bears the 120 degree structure. So magnons defined for the perfect 120 degree structure are unstable in this white region over here. So what does it mean? Again, the picture has been looked at in a completely different context, and the JK model, to which I come in a few moments, hopefully, is that it actually, for the classical model, what happens is that you start nucleating the long wavelength distortion of the 120-degree structure. And you have three additional Bragg peaks, just a second, occurring in the proximity of the K-points. So you have a combination of three spiral structure, which was called as a Z2 vortex state, and Natasha Perkins just wrote a paper in the inaugural issue of PRR, which I highly recommend reading. Yes?
Yeah, so you showed that the corrections at large are such that you have an overlap between competing phases. But the corrections due to quantum fluctuations, so regarding the stability of the classical phase, right? But the correction in small s case could be the opposite, right?
So the red plot showed in the previous slide is for spin 1/2.
Right, but from the stability of the magnon spectrum.
Right. This is independent of spin.
No, but it is not done in the largest limit.
So this is when epsilon k square is less than zero. Epsilon k square in the linear approximation is just, you know, there is an overall factor of s, but the structure is not as dependent.
Okay.
So it's the same for all spins.
Okay.
Sasha, what is the green region indicating?
The boundary region indicating what?
The green region. So is the green where?
So the green is within this region over here. The magnons defined within the 120-degree states are stable. So they are stable outside of the classical region as of their phase as well.
But there are still white regions around this 120-degree.
Here? Yeah, those are these other incommensurate stripe phases which I've indicated before.
Oh, I see.
So this is so there is actually an interesting combination of on the so this is sort of a classical / semi-classical consideration. So if you are interested in the classical model phase diagram, you have to include these regions of non-incommensurate phases when there are a combination of them. Okay. All right. So let's switch to the quantum case and sort of for real, meaning that we can use numerical methods. And the question is, how do you explore a large parameter space with DMRG? And one method which was developed in Steve White's group over the years is you just fix parameters of your model, and then you vary one of them along the length of one cylinder. And if you just look at the cylinder, you often can just read different phases as a picture of 1D phase diagram. And of course, it's a biasing system, so you have Hamiltonian varying along the length of the cylinder, which sounds like a bad idea. But then you can use, once you find something suspicious or interesting, you can go and check this region, which may be interesting, with a bunch of other methods, which can be called more traditional. We call them non-scans methods, and they include one-rail scaling, they include correlation length analysis, they include structure factor and stuff. Okay, I'll show you a few examples of how this works. Let's look at delta 0.5. Again, it's a cut in the middle of that cylinder. And the dashed line here is the classical phase diagram. This is a scan along the J++ axis. You can essentially see with your naked eye the transition between 120 degree and the stripe YZ phase. You can proceed with a finite value of JZ plus and scan again in the same direction, and you can see how the stripe phase approaches, kind of encroaches on the 120 degree phase. And you can plot the ordered moment, and you can see it has a dip, and you can identify a phase transition with this dip. You can go with individual 6x20 clusters and poke in the phase diagram like this, and this is along this line, and see that indeed you just have a transition between 120 and the stripe phase. You can do more. You can cut it in this in the vertical direction, just JZ plus. This is the long, the scan. This is a non-scan analysis. So again, a perfect visual evidence of direct transition between the two. Spin 1/2, no questions. So it's robust order, only direct transitions. And there was a prior paper by Shouqing Wang group, which used mostly exact diagonalization with some DMRG and some fidelity analysis, and they had their phase diagram, and we overlaid ours, and it's essentially coincides. So the other thing is that continuity argument tells you that nothing will happen if you reduce delta further to the bottom of the cylinder. So basically, this was sort of a doomsday for the spin liquid prospects in this model, until we started digging deeper, and it's all the credit goes to Zhenyu Zhu, who was insistent, persistent, and so on. Because every run, every long cylinder run, there are no symmetries left in the Hamiltonian. All the symmetries in the Hamiltonian are completely broken. So it requires up to 6 weeks for each run. So it's it was a lot of time investment over and everybody's side. So just to maybe address Andre's question, what happens along this line, right? There was some opening maybe there, and we scanned. This is Delta 1 now. This is the surface of the Heisenberg surface of the cylinder. And this is, again, direct transition from the stripe X to stripe YZ state. You can see it visually. You can observe it through the ordered moment. And now you go, again, by these scans, which I showed you for the lesser delta. And you see that you kind of don't see much here. And then you don't see much here. And but you still see something. And again, going and poking with the more traditional method, it's basically tells you that it actually has to do with the fact that there is a reduction of the ordered moment in the Heisenberg limit. So you just start observing less of it. And your eye is not the good measurement device here, but you still observe along this line and along that line and along this line. You observe a direct transition. It still took some persistence, so now the scan in the vertical direction. And now the scan is very different because again, you hardly see any difference from the previous one. But if you look at the comparison of the non-scans, you can see that the order decreases. There is some finite value of the ordered moment because of the boundary conditions, but there is observable kink here. This is delta 0.1. Compare the with the delta 0.5. This is how it behaves at delta 0.5. Unfortunately, it's hard to see here, but there is also a kink in for delta 0.8, but it's in a narrower region. So we started being suspicious about this region and performed calculation of the decay of correlation length. So you basically pin a spin at the boundary and observe how it decays, how the magnetization decays. And if it's a power law, it's an ordered state. If it's exponential, it means that you're likely to have some gapped non-magnetic state there. And that's what's shown for several points along this line. So then we perform more cuts. And more cuts, and they are shown here. And indeed, the kind of the critical value with our experience is that if it hits 0.05, then it's really very suspicious for the spin liquid. Maybe the last one of this exercise is this cut, which is probably more impressive in the sense that you really don't see much here. And if you plot the ordered moment, you really don't see anything in the ordered moment as well. And there is a trick here for clipping one side from the end of it to avoid what's known as spin-on localization in this trade. But it's very convincingly showing you that there is no order at the Heisenberg surface at this point, the Heisenberg surface of the cylinder at this point. And the scan is done from the surface of the cylinder towards the center of it to 0.5. And at 0.5, about 0.7, the order appears back. But there is certainly a non-magnetic region here.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
So, but in principle, there could be a more complex order parameters,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So. Okay. So there is a slide on that a little later. So the complex order parameter means pneumatic order or a valence bond order. They are obviously seen if you do some tricks on the boundary with the boundary conditions. They immediately trigger a response throughout the system. So those can be ruled out very quickly. Okay? All right. What I will show in a few slides that it's as good as any spin liquid which is known from the MRG from the past. Okay. In fact, it's related to one of the spin liquids there. So the summary of it is that there is a spin liquid region number one, kind of at the tip of the 120 degree state, and this is the topographic map of it with the widest base at the surface of the cylinder penetrating to within the cylinder to about 0.75 maybe. Delta. So you can look at the structure factor, and this may partially answer your question, But it's basically, first of all, it looks like molten 120 degree structure, meaning that 120 degree structure would have sharper peaks at the key points. Here you have broadened peaks, and you can characterize, you can actually distinguish the ordered from non-ordered quantitatively. But one observation, interesting observation for us, was that there is a J1, J2 model spin liquid, which is now well established. And the structure factor looked surprisingly the same. So this is fully isotropic model. This is very anisotropic model. So we decided to look closer at it, but let me first show where the J1, J2 business comes in. So this is a phase diagram of J1, J2 model. Here you have 120 degree state. Here you have a stripe phase. And this is where you have spin liquid. And this has been known since 2015. From
spin liquid?
Huh?
What kind of spin liquid?
Let me come to that, OK? As DMRG goes, it always kind of favors Z2 gapped spin liquids. But the answer is we don't know. 4 years later, we don't know. So there are still works written about the nature of the spin liquid. Okay, so I'll stop short of claiming what it is, but it's likely to be this Dirac cone spin liquid, which is similar to what's found in Kagome. Okay.
So sorry, Sasha. Yeah. You said the DMRG favor is one, but presumably the phase diagram is independent of the method used to.
Oh yeah. Thank you. So there will be a different method. Yeah.
Oh.
In just a second. So surprisingly, even after all there's lots of work after this on triangle lattice J1, J2. Many of you have contributed to that. But nobody looked at the delta in the XXZ variable. Okay. So we were the first to find out that actually it extends quite far in the delta. It extends up to 0.3 delta, not to the full range there. And again, it lingers near the classical phase diagram, but okay. So that was an interesting find. The second find was that, OK, let's add one of these anisotropic parameters. So the motivation was completely different, but let's just add it. And what you see is that it actually diminishes very quickly. This is 0.06 value of the J++ term. And it shrinks kind of volume, well, area-wise, this spin liquid region by a factor of 4 or something. So again, scans and different DMRG probes give you the topographic map for that region. So it's kind of J1, J2 with some anisotropic terms. So again, if you draw the three-dimensional picture of it, it looks like tetrahedron, deformed tetrahedron. And here's a place for a confirmation from a different method, from Leon's group, his student, and Leon worked with variational Monte Carlo analysis, and it's a little harder to see, but the blue region here is actually the base of the our spin liquid here. This is the Heisenberg limit. This is XY limit. There is no spin liquid, so it's a step 0.25 in my language. So it's 0.25, no spin liquid, and you can maybe able to make out this is the tip of our tetrahedron here, and then the next cut is here, and the comparison is quantitative here. Okay, you don't have to be DMRG. I fully agree with you. Okay, so now there is sort of a four-dimensional space because of the J2, and there is this interesting question: is there a connection between the two? Because their structure factors look so amazingly close. And if it would be a connection, it would be actually a natural connection along the rim of a 120 degree structure over here in the classical phase diagram. And so we performed one more scan along this red line. Well, more scans, but this is a different cut with delta as an axis. So this is the large extent of the J1, J2. This is a small extent in delta for that anisotropic model. And this is the cut we performed. And this is an interesting finding. There is no transition. Each bond actually here on this picture represents S dot S for the nearest neighbors. So it's an informative plot. It's not just it's not showing you any magnetic order. It also shows you that there's no pneumatic order. And you can quantify that as well. You can subtract the average and see, you know, is there any kind of valence bond solid emerging. You can also introduce the bond modulation at the boundary and see if it propagates within. If it decays exponentially, it's not supporting that state. And that's all been done. But we call this similarity, actually, these pictures are taken from the structure factor taken here, from this region. They're all identical within 5%. So we call it isomorphism of spin liquid. And this name was invented before they made this movie, Shape of Water. So I'm a little bit proud of it. Okay, so there is no also chirality. We checked for chirality. There is no chirality indication for up to 10 to the minus 15, I think. So it's very...
So it tells you that there is no lattice pneumatic order. What about spin pneumatic order? No, but you can still have it on the bonds. You can have it, define it on the bonds.
You have ferromagnetic interactions.
The field is wide open. Please. Yeah, there are lots of interesting questions, okay? Okay, so let me switch gears and go to a couple of more interesting aspects of that. So as I said, there is a sort of multi-language community here. We speak in many different languages, and one of these languages is this KJ or JK gamma gamma prime model, which is sort of native to honeycomb lattice. And you can actually translate identically. This ice-like language can be translated identically here. And then you can play the game, which is very much liked in the honeycomb community. You can throw away gamma and gamma prime, because those are complicated terms. You don't like them. You only like K, in fact, but you allow to add J because it does a minimal harm. So you reduce the number of parameters from 4 to 2. You have one-dimensional phase diagram. So where is this phase diagram leave? It actually leaves on the Heisenberg surface of our cylinder, and it corresponds to this ellipse with k only negative point here, k positive only point here, and some other points one can elaborate on them. I'll do that later. So there is a reduced sort of model which lives on that manifold. What it tells us immediately, actually, that this JK model has high asymmetry. In the classical limit, it actually has emergent Goldstone modes. And that was a big puzzle for us. And Natasha Perkins told me to stop thanking her for this half an hour conversation, which was really illuminating, because she told us about dualities. She told us about this. It basically was about dualities. But this mode here corresponds to, for instance, suppression of the Niel temperature. If you try to calculate Niel temperature, and supposedly you should have very gapped states for the strike phases, and suddenly you don't, and that was a puzzle for us. Okay, but the most important thing for us was the following development. So there is, within this JK model, there is a transformation which is known as Klein duality, or Klein dualities, rather. So there is a four-spin transformation, which essentially leaves one of the spins on the you take four nearest neighbor spins, you leave one alone, and rotate three remaining spins along the axis of this weird reference frame, which is not the lattice reference frame. It's associated with the lattice of ligands, rather, with the octahedral environment. So you rotate by pi each of these spins around the corresponding x, y, and z axis in this reference frame. And for instance, if you start with a strike phase, you end up with a ferromagnetic state. But the more powerful statement is that actually it maps the model on itself with a different set of parameters, which means that the properties of these two phases must be related to each other. Okay? So meaning that this red region over here is dual to the ferromagnetic region over there. And in that language, you immediately realize that, yeah, well, now it's understandable. If this line doesn't have any gap, it has Goldstone modes, therefore dual space also should have no gap and Goldstone mode, and that's what we observed. But again, the most important finding was that actually that piece of that ellipse maps onto is Klein dual to that one. Now, watch my hands. So we have one spin liquid here, but this region is dual to that region. Therefore, there should be a dual spin liquid over here. So there was another round of calculations using DMRG. Again, scans in different directions. I'm showing you one. So along this tip of that little triangle over here, which is sort of going through the tricritical point. This is a no scan state. At that very point, and it shows you very weak ferromagnetic correlations and not much else. And this is a structure factor which is again showing you what looks like molten dual 120 degree state. This is the origin of the name for the phase. So it has the antiferromagnetic phase here would have well-defined peaks at these points, which are k over 2 now, so kind of four times reduced Brillouin zone. One mesmerizing point for us was that there is this epicenter of the spin liquid lies on directly on that white line, which I emphasized in the beginning. So only anisotropic terms exist along this line and here. So we were wondering if, you know, if this is the kind of the missing piece of the puzzle, and maybe there is a Kitaev solution or something. And I phrased it at the last March meeting, and Roderick thankfully was in the audience, and he basically said, "Have you checked, exact diagonalization? Like, it can tell you immediately whether it's integrable." And I wasn't aware of that, but Cécile Repilan, who just left the program, was in the audience, and she just volunteered her time into looking into that, and the answer is no. Okay, so it's not integrable, but you know, it's still a good candidate for the spin liquid. So as a byproduct of our study, by the way, this is an update. People have looked at the triangle lattice KJ model before us, before the whole thing with materials had started. They missed both spin liquids. I won't name names. There is also a misidentification of that part. It's a stripe phase, while it was referred to as pneumatic phase, which is can only exist in some very, 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 very narrow sense. And this part of the phase is they refer to Z2 because it's a distorted 120 degree phase, but we refer to it as 120 degree phase. Okay. We've made lots of scans, and actually this slide was intended partially to the tomorrow's talk by George. So there are lots of scans which went unpublished, and because we were just checking ourselves whether this point is indeed dual to that one, because that would mean that it should behave like Heisenberg ferromagnets, and it does. But the other interesting point, which is self-dual, meaning that it's by this Klein transformation it goes on itself, it's a phase boundary between ferromagnetic and the stripe phase. So we looked at it under some angle, not along the blue line. And this is the DMRG scan. And you start with a kind of this end, so ferromagnetic, and then it goes into stripe phase. And the colors show you that the spins are actually tilted out of the plane. And you can see some mess at the phase transition. So it's clearly, you know, to an expert, it clearly looks like a system, you know, the DMRG tries to find something, and it just doesn't. You know, it's a first-order-like transition. Okay, it looks like a first-order transition. And there are some oscillations here, like a Friedel oscillation at the boundary. And it's, of course, biased because we begin scan on this side of the cylinder and then on this one. So it's it tells you that, you know, DMRG is not a perfect technique. In fact, you know, if you look right at the boundary, it should not show you ferromagnetic state. It can as well show you this state. And for some reason, it chooses that one. And the reasons can be subtle. Okay, and you can pin that order, and it will show you that order. So it's not a perfect technique.
Sorry, just for this green line.
Yeah, go. Yeah.
So you have the ferromagnetic on this side, and that's the what's this green line? Can you
just... Oh, the green line is where the phase transition must be, because there is no choice. Whether it's a quantum model, non-quantum model, the transition must be at this point. Okay.
Now, so the question is that why is the ferromagnetic order extending the region of instability?
Oh, yeah. That's what I'm saying. So you bias the system by starting on the ferromagnetic end. There is a tilt of the parameters, if you wish. There is a gradient. Okay? So you're creating a change. So the Hamiltonian here is different from Hamiltonian here, here, here. Right? So each next row works as a boundary condition for the next one. Okay, so if you start on this end instead, you will have the same behavior on the stripe phase will proliferate on the other. This is again to say that DMRG is not the perfect technique. However, what I want to say, I'm not a practitioner of DMRG, but I sort of learn its virtues by proximity effect. Okay. And this is to actually answer one of, in all this trilogy, we had extensive fights with referees. And one of the referees was, and I hope he's either in the audience or will be watching this at some point. He accused us in a mass production of spin liquids in an assembly line fashion. Which is, first of all, it's totally unfair because Steve White's group is responsible for shutting down two spin liquids, J1, J2 on the square lattice and J1, J2 on the honeycomb lattice, in the last 5 years or so. Second of all, the premise was that, and actually the longer quote would be, is that you can take any phase boundary and you will see a spin liquid with the DMRG. And I'm showing you this slide precisely to show that it will go, the DMRG will go out of its way to find the ordered state. Why is that? Because DMRG is a technique which is biased towards a low entanglement state. It will fight to find a low entanglement state, which is normally an ordered state. However, if it finds the one which is highly entangled state, this finding is really, really stable. And that's the power of it. It's like that ring in the Ring of Frodo story, but in this case, the ring is actually good. It wants to be found, so this is the case for DMRG. So you can take 2011 finding of Kagome lattice spin liquid, which before it was believed to be a valence bond solid. And 8 years later, answering your question, Andre, we still don't know what the spin liquid is. We have some kind of selection already, but we don't know exactly what that spin liquid is. But it's still spin liquid 8 years after. For the triangular J1, J2, it's still a spin liquid. We still don't know whether it's chiral or not or some other restriction.
Can I ask you a question? So you sure. Just said about shutting down honeycomb lattice. Are you referring to our paper, for
chance? In a way, yes.
So, but didn't it turn out to be actually chiral spin liquid?
It turns out to be a valence bond solid, as well as,
So with
oh no, that's XY. Okay. You have two papers, I think. One the Heisenberg and one XY. Or you don't have Heisenberg.
I'm okay. Curious. No.
The XY has this unusual order, which is.
So this wasn't shut down. Just to be.
This was a discovery that there is an Ising order parameter, and instead of.
In a subsequent paper. Anyways, we should discuss it.
Right? Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, last kind of small chapter here is the first paper which was basically the beginning of our motivation. Some experimental data showed that this material referred to as a YMGO has no order, broad features in S of Q, you can see them here. And the paper with that plot actually had the title that's like observing spin on Fermi surface or something like that directly. So it was suspected to be spin liquid, strongly suspected as a spin liquid with peaks at M points over here, center of the edge of the brilliant zone, which is corresponds to the open surface spinons. There are, of course, concerns from the beginning because there are, you know, the peaks are as broad in the nominally polarized phase. Then thermal conductivity came, no signature of transport by spins. At very low temperatures, there is a freezing. And it was known since the time of conception of this material that magnesium and gallium, which have different charges, are equally mixed in these layers. And this is, of course, responsible actually for observed broadening of each individual doublet beyond the resolution limits, well beyond the resolution limits. And, you know, in the logic of crystal field splitting, this is, you know, this is something which will modulate the crystal field splitting in space, in real space, and therefore will affect your Hamiltonian. So disorder is prevalent in this case. That's a statement. However, attempts existed to extract parameters, and basically it reduced number of parameters of the nearest neighbor model because that one was essentially zero, and J++ was rather subleading. But it added significant J2. So we investigated that, and again, with the phase diagram you have already seen, the question is, where is that YMGO? And it turns out that it's well outside of this cone, but kind of close to the J2 axis here, so because the anisotropy is really small. So the scenario we came up with is the following. Basically, that boundary over here is not where you have a transition between just stripe X and stripe YZ. There is actually a whole continuum of different stripe configurations. And the question is which of the state is chosen. It's again a matter of the order by disorder, which gives you this profile with the landscape of 0.03j, which is kind of small. And if you assume you put a disorder on top of that, and keeping in mind that J++ is a subleading term, and it comes as a difference of the diagonal terms, you can come up with an idea that actually the J++ term is the most disordered one. So what we have considered is essentially the J1, J2, XXZ model with random J++. And again, just to recall that the different signs of J++ favor different directions of spins, for instance, and that indeed leads to disorder looking, the disorder averaging of in, both in real space and k-space, and the pictures look similar to what what's observed in experiment. I won't go into much details here. So this is basically the bottom line, and it was supported later by a number of papers, including the one from Leon's group, that actually the in general these systems, the rare earth-based systems with these anisotropic interactions are intrinsically more susceptible to I still have 3 minutes, right? Okay. So intrinsically more susceptible to even plain bond disorder will work as a transverse field and therefore will eliminate the long-range order. Okay. So reality-wise, there were some revisions of where parameters are, and let me just come back to this point. So even if somebody would be able to push that range of parameters for YMGO onto that intersect of extended spin liquid region, you would run into a wrong spin liquid because the spin liquid which we found is has peaks at the K points and observed features are at M points. So there are some new materials coming along, and there are neutrons for powder which show a great peak at K point. No order, but an order in rather weak magnetic fields, and there are indications that this material is rather isotropic for the bond-independent part. So the question remains, is it like in that region over here where spin liquid is, or maybe it's, again, there is a remainder of disorder effect, so is it extrinsic or intrinsic effect? So this is still, still a question to be resolved. But I'm happy to see that at least it's we with the phase diagram available, we can tell where the possible phases are for this material. The next material, which we will hear more about very soon, I heard there are some neutron scattering data coming along. They were able to synthesize some reasonable crystals for the sulfur version of this, and it has much lower delta, so it's somewhere here. It also doesn't order at zero at down to low temperatures. Okay, so we'll see what comes out. So basically, my conclusion is twofold, and so we didn't expect. Actually, we didn't even think that this would be the outcome. But we ran across two spin liquids, both non-Kitaev, both look like you know the maybe Dirac type spin liquids. And in general, you know, having a phase diagram of some basic model understood, I think it's a helpful framework for everyone. If I have one more minute, let me continue my rant about the models. Okay. So again, you have models, and so there are some models I didn't talk about. Again, the problem is, you know, talking to experimentalists, talking to other people who have different conventions. So as an outsider of this field, or a relative outsider, a newcomer, let's put it this way, coming from J1, J2 land, the entire kind of field of anisotropic models looks to me like an infamous construction site, but kind of in reverse, okay? Because there, people came with one language and they were dispersed by speaking different ones. We come with different languages, so there are different red winds here. The one from Kitaev land with some select pictures, and some from Iceland. And there are some other heroes coming from different lands with yet different models. So altogether, I think and there are some heroes who are actually trying to translate between these languages, but you know, it takes a while to you know Actually, every single newcomer has to figure out this translation for him or herself. So I think it's time for us to figure out lingua franca. Okay? And I can go into kind of details for each of these languages, but briefly, JK gamma, gamma prime model sounds perfect. You know, it's just a good sounding name. It also provides you with these deep symmetries, which I found an example of. But it's, in my humble opinion, it's actually awful to use. If you try to calculate something, especially in the field, it's really not suitable model. This model is much better, the ice-like. But if you try to pronounce its name, JZZ, J plus minus, plus minus, JZ plus minus, you can already compete for some, you know, spelling bee contest. So it sounds really terrible. And again, there are these issues with pluses, minuses, and so on. So I offer everyone this compromise, if you wish, of XXZ, J plus minus, JZ plus minus, which sounds, I think, a little better. And the reason for all of that is that, in my opinion, what happens is that we are still holding people in that J1, J2 land who would otherwise would be able to come and help us with our problems. And I talked to Lucille about that. And her answer was like, but we don't need more people. So in that case, let's just forget about all I said and ask ourselves whether we're doing enough to keep these people away. All right, that's it.
Thank you, Sascha, for entertaining and informative talk. And a few rants,
Lonnie? On the Klein dualities. Is it obvious that it's more than a spectral equivalence? I mean, you're making the point that the eigenstates are related. That's stronger than saying there's just some spectral equivalence.
Yeah, so its entire set of properties is identical. So if you look at the thermodynamics, it should be identical. If you look at...
That's still spectral.
If you look at the structure factor, it requires transformation within the... It basically requires... certain transformation in the Q space.
Yeah, but it obviously changes entanglement, no? This transformation, if you change whatever thing to a ferromagnet, nothing is as weakly entangled as...
No, not in this case.
It's not a ferromagnet.
Yeah, okay.
So my question is actually related to what Ronnie asked. So should I think of it as similar to the Vanier-Kramers duality? In the sense that, yes, you could write down and the model is self-dual.
Yeah.
But at the cost that what you call a spin on one side is actually a horribly distorted, well, it's a distorted field that's actually non-local. So when you say the model is self-dual, just with a different change of parameters, can you tell me what is the spin S on the left corresponds to the spin S tilde on the right? Is that other thing also local quantity?
It is, in this case, it is a local quantity because it's
and
a local transformation.
Is it the rotation?
Yeah, so there are, they're just rotation around each 3 out of 4 spins are rotated in a described fashion.
Okay, so the phases do not go one to one in the sense that what you call for one side is something else on the other, but both of them are local in that sense.
Right.
Right, and if one is a product state, the other should also be a product
state. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Right, so
So maybe you said it, but when you were making the comparison between the structure factors for the J1, J2 model, and the other one looks awfully similar. So what did you do with, like, did you show that actually the structure factors are transformed in a trivial manner at the end through the dualities, such that the observable look the same?
So
Because it doesn't have to be, we
didn't, because we know that it's an open cylinder, first of all. So we don't have, in principle, there are boundary conditions which will affect for instance, the rotational symmetry here, the discrete rotation. But what I'm showing here in the right of this slide is the correlation function up to 11th neighbor. So it's S dot S up to 11th neighbor.
It's the same as the S as the parabolic in the transform mode?
Yes. So, okay, it's showing you the same thing differently, but I don't know if it may be more convincing.
But then if you decompose the structure in a Newton observable, for example, in spin flip and non-spin flip, then...
Okay. I think it's a longer conversation. In principle, there are different different contributions of S plus S minus channels. But my memory was that the surprise was that if you look at the structure factor of this anisotropic model, it looks terribly isotropic.
So, in the semi-classical part of the talk, you mentioned some incommensurate set, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, is there any concern about missing this kind of set in the P-energy?
Right. So, since nominally, if you look at the kind of the traditional ways, traditional way, if you have time, of course, is that you first do quasi-classics and then you go with numerical methods and investigate stuff. So, quasi-classically, that region. Or a big part of that region in a kind of 120 degree phase has this Z2 vortex state, which is chiral, okay? So non-zero chirality. So what we were looking for is that if this spin liquid is inherited anything from that chiral state, and observation is it's for spin 1/2, the answer is no.
So we've already had quite a bit of discussion on this, so I suggest at this point we thank Sasha again for the great talk.